Good evening. I'm Peter Steiner from University of Wolverhampton, and I was asked to welcome you. And I have to say, tonight we are in for a real treat. Yes, we had some music performances at previous conferences, but we never ever had a concert. This is the first one, and we warmly thank Anna Tanchis and Soy Korolenko for being here this evening and for coming all the way from Canada to London. Both are most prominent in the academic world and in the world of music. Anna, among others, is the Al and Malta Green Professor of Yiddish Studies and Director of the Anna Tannenbaum Center for Jewish Studies at the University of Toronto. She created and directed the Grammy-nominated Yiddish Glory project together with artist Soy Korolenko, a multilingual singer who has a PhD in Russian literature and has released numerous CDs and numerous interviews available online on YouTube, which I can strongly recommend. Tonight we hear about and we listen to music written during the Holocaust in Ukraine and in other parts of the Soviet Union, among others, by women and children. As we will be introduced to the context and the discovery of these songs, I will keep myself very short. Dear friends, teure Freunde, please welcome Anna and Soy.
Thank you, Peter, for this wonderful introduction. Hi, thank you all for coming here and battling that strike, the train strike. I mean, it does not go unappreciated. So I'll begin our story, and it starts 27 years ago when the librarians of the Ukrainian National Library in Kiev, led by Lyudmila Sholokhova, whose photo you see on the screen, found dozens of unnamed, unlabeled boxes were filled with handwritten Yiddish documents in the basement of their library. It turned out that this was long presumed lost archive left behind by Soviet Jewish ethnomusicologist Moisey Berigovsky and his colleague Ravim Lerner, and he was a linguist who worked with him. The only reason I have this photo to show you is that's the only photo of Ravim Lerner that exists. Because that's a mugshot taken in 1951 when Ravim Lerner was arrested by Stalin's government for conducting this project. So he, Moisey Berigovsky, and a number of other people spent the entire World War II preserving Yiddish music, stories, and jokes from Jews living and dying in the Soviet Union, in ghettos, working in the Soviet home front, or serving in the Red Army. Many of the songs were created by women and some by children. Now, Soy Korolenko and I are the first team of an artist and a historian to work with these documents ever since they were found in Ukraine. And these documents are first and sometimes the only Jewish eyewitness accounts of the Holocaust in Ukraine. Simply because in many places where the songs were created, there were no survivors, or survivors did not live long enough to tell their story. Now, of 6 million Jews who were killed during the Holocaust, about 2.5 million were killed within the Soviet borders of 1941, and approximately 900,000 were killed in Ukraine. Now, none of the songs found in those boxes and these are people who worked at that department of the Ukrainian Academy of Science. So none of the songs that I showed you earlier found in those boxes have been known. In other words, they did not survive in popular collections of Holocaust music created in Warsaw Ghetto, in Lodz Ghetto, in Vilna Ghetto, in Kovno Ghetto. Not a single text corresponded with what we have already known, that people sang and circulated during the war in other places. Some of the documents in this archive were pieces of paper, sometimes crinkled. They came from places that give chills to Holocaust historians. For example, there is a small piece of paper, unfortunately I don't have a picture to show you, but I will tell you what it is. That piece of paper in the archive is a crinkled paper thrown out of the fence of Berdichev ghetto. Now, the Germans came to Berdichev very early in the war, and in 1941, they created ghetto within the walls of Berdichev monasteries, is what you see on the screen. All Jews of Berdichev, which was about 30% Jewish, maybe 35% Jewish before the war, were rounded up and sent behind those walls, and within 10 days, they were murdered. Among people murdered there was Vasily Grossman's mother, for example. So the archive contains a piece of paper that the 10-year-old girl threw out through that fence. Somebody picked it up, and for miraculous ways, this paper ended up in the archive. The paper said just three words: don't forget that we existed and how we died. And then in Yiddish, it repeated three times: vergess uns nicht, vergess uns nicht, vergess uns nicht. Don't forget us, don't forget us, don't forget us. As much as we know, that's the only child-produced document from Berdichev ghetto that exists in the world. Another example of documents found in the archive comes from Kamenets Podolsk. Kamenets Podolsk is a well-known site for Holocaust historians. This is the site of one of the first major shooting massacres that took place in August 1941, when 26,000 Jews were killed there, like 8,000 of the first shooting and then more. And Kamenets Podolsk also had a very short-lived ghetto, and another child wrote a very short song about what was going on with them. As you can see, the song was written in Russian. You also see, like now you get to see how this note is also folded and crinkled, and that's because, again, it was thrown out of the fence. And this is a remake or a comment of a popular Russian song which says, why did you, my dear mother, give birth to me? It's like a song popular among prison inmates. And those of you who read Russian will see that this is not a very good grammatical Russian, so we can guess that the child's mother tongue was probably Yiddish, but they already understood at that time that very few people will be able to read something that they write in Yiddish, so they write it in Russian in a very short note where they explain what's happening there, you know, that they were rounded up in ghetto, that everyone calls them Yuda, diminishing name for a Jew, and so on. So Berigovsky and his colleagues were collecting these documents and were hoping to publish them in an anthology which was all ready to come out in 1949. You see this beautiful, sexy cover on the screen for you to enjoy. You know, with the title, The Creativity, Jewish Creativity in the Soviet Union During the Great Patriotic War. The date there is 1949. But the book didn't come out because all researchers, all scholars who worked on the project were arrested, being accused in Jewish nationalism and anti-Soviet activities, and they were arrested. They were told that this archive is confiscated from them and destroyed. So the book never saw the light of day, and some fragments of it survive in that archive. So today, we will share with you some of the songs from this project and tell you extraordinary stories behind them. So the first song that you will hear is called Transnistria Lullaby. It was recorded by Berigovsky in the city of Chernivets in 1945. It's a city in southwestern Ukraine. Before the war, it was Romania. A school child named Ruth Uplenger, who was a grade 5 student, sorry, no picture, but something else of her I will show you. She was a grade 5 student of school number 6 in Chernivets, and she performed the song for Berigovsky. Now, Berigovsky traveled after the war, like even a little during the war, from 1944 till about the end of 1947, to recently liberated areas of Ukraine, and was looking for survivors who would sing songs for him. So she was one of those children. And when she sang it for him, he also asked her to write the words down. And what you see on your screen is on the right is a handwriting by that girl, Ruth Uplanger. On the left is another child, Lance Vinokur, who also sang that song for Berezovsky, and he also asked her to write it down. So you could see all the Vinokur's text is written on some sort of a textbook, a notebook from school, or something like this with the children's handwriting. The reason why Berezovsky told them to do this, he says, well, I want to make sure that I get all the words right, and thanks to that methodology, we now can actually look at examples of children's handwriting and see how long the songs were that they remember. Now, both Lance Vinokur and Ruth Uplanger survived the war in Mogilev-Podolsky ghetto, which was a long transit point in Transnistria, part of Ukraine, that part of Ukraine, let me see if I have a map for you here, between the rivers Bug and Dniester, and most of it was occupied by the Romanian allies, of Romanian Nazi allies. And the words of the songs were written by Relly Bly. Let's see, I don't know how I'm doing here with the PowerPoint. Just a second. Yes, by Relly Bly, who you see on the screen here. She was a prisoner at Mogilev-Podolsky ghetto, where she lived with her two-year-old son. And at some point there, she wrote this lullaby that kids, right, like Ruth Uplanger and her friends, were singing and remembered long after they were liberated from ghetto. So please welcome Psoy Korolenko with the song Transnistria Lullaby.
Der Zug mir verjuckt die Sitzen drinnen, Menschig Ditzebug mir verjuckt die Sitzen drinnen, Menschig Ditzebug. Dort Winkel der Breiter Dniester schickt a Gris mir zu. Find mein Moment in mein Schwester, o Sonne, du schon du. Find mein Moment in mein Schwester, o Sonne, du schon du. In dort um mir gefinnen, eld hinge neut, in der scheiner Ukraine, jetzt regiert der Deut. In der scheiner Ukraine, jetzt regiert der Deut. Fußhelm hingerkehlt, toi das Ach gebracht, toi das oi viel brengen selb, kein mehr Gräß der Schlacht, toi das oi viel brengen selb, kein mehr Gräß der Schlacht. In kein Käfer kein Matzeiwe is farins nicht du. In a sommen Riva grüßen legt men ins Ziel. In a sommen Riva grüßen legt men ins Ziel. Sturm durch die Teibe kennt der Wetterkrieg, wie der Wetter die Sinnen scheinen, in Sarjev's Terzijig, wieder wird es ihnen schaden, in Sarjev's Terzijig. In Dankim mir befreit in der Holterim, Lusti toite, bade toite, vedu zlem zašej. Lusti toite, bade toite, vider vedu zlem zašej.
Moisey Berezovsky himself survived the war in Ufa in the Soviet rear, but his parents were killed in Babi Yar, a ravine near Kiev, where on September 29th and 30th, 1941, almost 34,000 Jews were murdered. Now, when Berezovsky returned to Ukraine in 1944, he and his colleagues began that field work and traveled in places, honestly, like a month or even sometimes weeks after they had been liberated, and were looking for survivors to record music from them. The reason they could only go to Transnistria is because if the part of Ukraine that was occupied by the German army had very low survival rate among Jews, less than 1%. But in Transnistria, there were more survivors, in some places 15%, in some places 25% even. And this is when they were looking for people who could sing some songs for them. On September 2nd, 1945, Berezovsky arrived to a small town of Zhabokrych in Vinnytsia region of Ukraine. Before the war, of 4,000 residents of Zhabokrych, 679 were Jews. On July 27th, 28th, and 29th, 1941, a German mobile squad unit, together with some Romanian troops, and with the help of some local non-Jewish residents of Zhabokrych, rounded up women, children, men, and brought them in groups and shot them in three cellars, 10 at a time. This was the largest single recorded massacre in this part of Vinnytsia region, during which about 437 people were killed. One of the people who survived the massacre was a local hairdresser named Shikel Gershberg, who he was hiding in a neighbor's basement cellar, and he saw the shooting from a very close distance, but was looking, and he himself survived the war. And what happened in Zhabokrych was this: so after the German troops shot the residents, they left. And then they left Zhabokrych to Romanians to rule, and they delegated a lot of it to local populations. So what happened was that they then set up a ghetto there, and that ghetto existed up until 1944 when Zhabokrych was liberated. Some of the people who were shot in those cellars were rescued by the local population and put into those ghettos. So this is how Shikel Gershberg survived the war. Now, the day after he saw this massacre, he wrote down a song about what he witnessed. He wrote it on a piece of paper, put that paper in the pocket, and waited for 3 years until he could sing it to someone. So then, when Moisey Berezovsky came to Zhabokrych in 1945, it was his chance. And this is how the document looks like. So what happened during those trips is that Berezovsky would ask people to sing, and he would sometimes record it with audio, but it was expensive and hard, and very equipment was very heavy. So most of the time, he would write down the words and sight read the music. But like a lot of people who like to sing, poor Shikel Gershberg couldn't carry a tune. So you could see that even Berejkovsky, who's an experienced, you know, sight writer and who could do all this for other projects, he lined the paper, but, you know, he couldn't fill it. So anyway, so but the words survived, and also a little bit of an audio of that recording also survived. And today you will hear that song in a better arrangement than Schickel Gershberg did, but very close to the original, and that is the song called Zsombókhrics Massacre.
Узеним штейту лежа покричо цих пасіт. І нейним ферце вільйо, от мене гідним фіркейлер сварфірт. Моги тримти мечн, це драйсик ферцик витягу. І нієй дерфінцей з гіфонду хенку. Und getrieb Männer frue mit kleinen Kindern auf die Erd. In der Zatari, und wenn sie mehr niederkehrt, weil für die Hitze, für die Keiler, sind für den Ruhig, für die Kuhl, sollen sie ihre Pöden. І дурки бранки бом, драй тек зонен ти роцхем гігоген ти їдіше айза. І ти єдер твінзей, от гефірта нон ваца. І ти мечн зонен гілейн ти фінен плит. І ти гівалт у фунту. In dem roten Keller, rot die Sonne, uns jüdische Blüte auf jeden Slum. In der Zeit für den Schitter, in der Zerfuhr für den Sinnen am Ur. Der Keul ist für die Flur mit dem Kindisch gesehen, umgerieben. Nu a feel ein steh wie koil es mit der Fuhr mit dem Kind mit schon gewinn und gelieb mit nur kein Mensch nu a feel ein steh ein stell sich vor wo es doch steht lisch ab Ти бергілит, зінь, що діліт, ін зайні реми змогли. І ти дердервелт, дерганський лим, а з ним штейт лежа покрич, із гівона бусой лим. Git über der Welt dem Bons neu leben. Als für den Steht lisch ab okrich, ist gewonnen ab so leben.
Jewish cemetery in Zsombókhrics. And before we move on to the new song, I just want to say that on June 21st, 1944, when the Soviet investigative commissions came to Zsombókhrics to investigate what happened there, commissions for investigation of extraordinary crimes, they actually did a search and they found three shallow graves. One had 27 bodies in it, another one 350, another one 50. And the bodies were moved from cellars where they have been shot, and they were covered with chalk, so faces were still recognizable. And also some of the people were clothed, so they could find the identification documents as well. So they counted the name. Turns out the 435 people were in these graves. So the song was remarkably accurate in describing what actually took place in Żabokrycz in 1941. Since in some ways it ensured that if no witness left, there will be a song that will tell that story. Now, one of the scariest places in Transnistria was a camp named Pechora, located in the town with the same name and also in Vinnytsia region of Ukraine. Romanians occupied that beautiful town known as Switzerland of Ukraine at the end of July of 1941. And in September 1941, they took this beautiful place, former estate, summer estate of aristocrat Count Potocki, and they turned it into a camp for Jews. Now, before the war, it was a sanatorium for Red Army soldiers, and you see it's a beautiful territory. Prisoners called this site a death camp. Historians are still debating, was it a camp, was it a ghetto? I was still hesitating how to name it. But the way that things worked in Pechora is that people would shipped there from all areas of Transnistria, from Mogilev-Podolsk, from Bershit, from Żabokrycz, and they were put in this in the territory there, and they were not fed. And 10 days later, most of them died, and then they bring new ones. And this is how thousands of people died in Pechora. We still don't know exactly how many. Some sources say 4,000, some sources say 37,000. Now, prisoners refer to Pechora as the dead loop because it was closed off of fences. It was really impossible to get out of there unless one was a child. So sometimes children could get out, begged a little, or get at least water from the river. Now, there are no photos of Pechora from the time of the war, but there are tons of photos of today. In fact, the photos that I'm showing you now, I took them all from TripAdvisor, because Pechora is now back to being a sanatorium, being a spa. It's the TripAdvisor advertised before the war in Ukraine. Massages, microclimate, very good air because it's a combination of trees and the river. And it was a very popular vacation spot after the war as well. Now, not to upset vacationers, on a side door they put a little plaque there saying, the black one says that this is where the camp named Pechora was and where Jews were interned and killed. And your left, you see a sign that says Brothers Grave or Mass Graves. This is a nearby forest, really close, two steps from the fences of Pechora, where people who died there from starvation were buried. Now, many of Pechora prisoners were children, and unlike in most other places of Transnistria, children actually had a little bit longer lifespan than Pechora, because they could get out and smuggle outside of camp, sometimes coming back and supporting their parents. One of the biggest killers in Pechora were starvation, because people were not fed, also typhus and diseases. And at some point during the war, 1942, they started rounding up those kids and sending them to work, and this is how some of them survived. And one of the prisoners of Pechora, his name was Josef Braverman, he lost both of his parents there. They both died from typhus. And he himself came from Tulchin. It's a town near, not so far from Pechora. So on the day when his parents died, he wrote a song about to remember them and also remember this beautiful town of Tulchin, where he lived before the war. So these are photos of Tulchin, and I'm showing for you because, I don't know, this thing looks like Buckingham Palace almost, right? So we don't often think about Ukrainian small towns looking like that, but Josef Braverman was really hoping one day he will get to see Tulchin again. And in the song, you will hear, so I'll perform it in a second, he talks about the road that the residents of Tulchin took to Pechora. So, long story, but one of my former classmates many years ago was actually from Tulchin. And when I told him about this project, he said to me, I know a street on which Jews walked from Tulchin to Pechora, because I live on the street. So he sent me this photograph with the snow. This is the street of Tulchin, I don't know, like 5 years ago, where Jews walked from there to Pechora. And as they walked through that vegetable processing plant that you see, and that probably was the last thing that they saw of their favorite town. And in the song, you will hear mentioning this road, the road from where no one comes back. So I will now perform this song, Tulchin.
Unser Leben, was du zusammen geschaut, unser Muke, unser Weine, unaschir und unade, oloi meine junge Jun, gehen nicht von dein Schabe. Warum die jungen Bäume wachsen, zweigen werden grün? Und am Morgen, Junge, zwittert unser Leben mit Tulchin. Kommt die Zeit, und von den Bäumen flieht der schöne Zwiet herab. Und da soll, das liegt die Kleb. Bei uns hat's wieder ob. Wo du stehst nicht, wo du gehst nicht, und ein Schier und ohne Weg. Es wird nur scheinen unser Leben, wie in die Frier die Kette. Wo du stehst nicht, wo du gehst nicht, gäumen Menschen auf. Es wird noch scheinen unser Leben in die Frühe, die Gäte. Oi, die Helden, die ich so im Blut, wenn sie allein herum. Und das blutig Wort gestorben, große Kuh. Menschen fallen wie die Fliegen, nur verhungert vom Vergelt. Unser Mucke, unser Zorn, wissen wir die ganze Welt. Kein Mosom ist ein Verfall, doch so schuldig jüdisch blieb. Wo es im Endeffekt sind, vergissen in Europa beim Bankier. Nach der Walze gäumen Menschen in den Schere auf dem Weg. Und uns scheinen das Licht mit Leben wie in die Frier die Göte. Nur wie rett für die Werdesbrüder
other infectious diseases. About 200,000 Jews were killed there by cholera, tuberculosis, typhus, and malnutrition. When pandemics struck those ghettos, a lot was at stake because Romanian authorities threatened to prevent it. They were terrified of spreading the pandemic beyond ghetto walls. So they threatened ghetto leadership that if they don't stop it, everyone will be killed. And they stay true to their word. In some places, like in Bogdanovka, for example, a ghetto near Odessa, thousands of people were killed in order to prevent the spread of pandemic. So doctors in those ghettos worked around the clock in order to curb it and in order to stop the spread of the disease. In some places, like Mogilev Podolsky, for example, there was a big success because they came up with, they were trying everything. Public toilets, setting soup kitchens, even public bathrooms, and bathhouses, but nothing worked until somebody had a great idea to start making soap. And they set up those soap making workshops and started using that soap and also giving that soap to surrounding population as well, to people who were not in ghettos. And this is how the pandemic in that place was stopped. But the price was paid also by the doctors. About half of them, only some places, two-thirds, did not live to see the end of the war. They caught the disease and they died trying to help their patient. So epidemiologists today who use mathematical modeling, that's a very familiar term to us now after years of COVID, you know, we all hear about mathematical modeling of preventing disease. So they applied that to the histories of ghettos in Transnistria, and they said that doctors alone prevented at least 20 to 30,000 additional deaths, maybe more, because of their work. So our next song addresses that, but it was created by a child. It was performed by a child, actually, so the lyrics of it were written by Relly Bleich, who I already talked to you about. And it talks about typhus, but from a point of view of an enemy that is very little, but yet very powerful, a typhus louse. Now, Relly Bleich not only wrote lyrics that kids liked in Mogilev-Podolsky ghetto, she also ran a small theater for them. And kids were dressing up as different things in order to perform this music. So this particular thing, they were dressing up as lice and performing a song about, you know, how they are fighting against an enemy called a typhus louse. This song came to us with the tune, you see it on the screen, and the tune is a famous Yiddish song called Yosel Bear. It was written by Polish composer David Begelman, and he himself actually was killed in Auschwitz in 1945, and that song was very popular during the war in all parts of Europe, the tune, but the lyrics was different everywhere, and here it is, an aria or a song of a typhus louse.
Typhus lois, geyich merfin ois, ze ois, tra la 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 la. Viech kibidot ze gey, mishon bach karate, tra la 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 la. Viech kibidot ze gey, mishon bach karate, tra la 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 la. Tra yugen dik tzayich, binech mirshen al den schwach, tra la 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 la. No irremes fin de teure van doktor obach moire, tra la 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 la. No irremes fin de teure van doktor obach moire, tra la 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 la. Dait shob khmoire tra la 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 la. Van dait choy de brotzeh di kozak mi de reyach tra la 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 la. Van dait choy de brotzeh di kozak mi de reyach tra la 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 la. Nor blitzen lust men a roista shem az den shik tam gura heim. Tra-la-la-la-la-la. Nuf furchet mir a weg fin danen chvel mich nemen zu des sonnen. Tra-la-la-la-la-la. Furchet mir besinnt fin danen chvel mich nemen zu des sonnen. Tra-la-la-la-la.
by the way, at least a third, maybe even more, songs created and circulating in ghettos among children and adults were humorous songs. So this is not an untypical example. In fact, there's so much humor in those ghetto songs that sometimes it even surprised us. And as you know, humor is very hard to translate, so I think I have to explain this line here, because why Laos is afraid of a German and a doctor, because in Yiddish, you know, Deutsch, a German, sometimes was referred to a doctor in 19th century, because doctors were, you know, educated outside of the Pale of Settlement. So they called, they used sometimes the word Deutsch and doctor interchangeably. So that is picking up on that. But of course, during the war, that has a very different context, because the Laos is afraid of a doctor, but it's also afraid of the German. Moving on a little, about 400,000 Jews served in the Red Army, and as I said, the archive contained materials from ghettos, from the army, and from the Soviet home front, so we'll talk to you a little bit about the army now. 400,000 Jews served in the Red Army, and what we learned from this archive, it turns out they were also singing in Yiddish. And when I say we learned it from the archive, this is because there's no shortage of materials about Soviet Jewish Red Army veterans. Blavatnik Project interviewed, I think, 1,400 people who served, Jews who served in the Red Army. There are many other projects that have a large kind of collection depository of stories of their experiences. And these interviews are very different. They tell different stories. One thing that people often said, I myself interviewed over 200 Soviet Jewish war veterans. One thing they always said is that during the war, we did not sing in Yiddish. There was a lot of music. We sang in Russian. In fact, we didn't speak much Yiddish in public. And whenever I asked people, did you sing in Yiddish during the war? What did you like? They thought that this was such an uninformed question that they didn't want to talk to me about anything else, because if you ask that, how can you possibly understand what they went through? So, historians concluded, myself included, well, they didn't sing in Yiddish during the war, until we found this archive. And guess what? Collections of letters from Red Army soldiers depicting their experiences in a form of song in Yiddish. A lot of those songs focused on military experience, fighting, revenge. A lot of them were praising their weapons that they have. A lot of vocabulary, a lot of content of the songs was inspired by Ilya Ehrenburg, Soviet journalist, actually of Jewish origin as well, who in 1942 wrote this really famous article where he, in Russian I put it for you here, it says kill, where he encouraged soldiers not to see their enemy as humans, but rather as beasts and kill them without mercy. When New York Times republished this article, they gave it a little more politically correct translation, killed the German. But the content was the same. The article encouraged people not to abandon their human side and fight. A lot of lines from this article became songs that circulated in all languages of the Soviet Union, Ukrainian, Uzbeki, Kazakh, Tatar, and Yiddish as well. Now, Yiddish songs, perhaps more than others, praised specifically weapons. There are so many Yiddish songs from soldiers about rifles, pistols, rockets, cannons. I had to learn all this vocabulary in Yiddish myself when I was looking at this text. And it's not exactly surprising that they are praising all this weapon, because a Jewish soldier holding a weapon in 1943 was a very big deal. And the songs were talking about the fact that those soldiers are going to use these weapons in order to fight for their people. Another context of these songs is that it was really important for these soldiers to say that Jews are not sitting this war out in Tashkent. This was a poisonous myth or rumor or perception that Jews are actually not fighting in the war, but sitting somehow out in the Soviet rear. And these songs affirm very clearly and very loudly that Jews are fighting like everyone else. And, you know, so talking about this material recently to my colleagues in the University of Mariupol, you know, in the city, Ukrainian city, and the siege, and we were doing the Zoom seminar, and I was telling them about that song, about songs praising weapons such as machine guns and everything, and they said, well, we have the same, we're just not writing them down, but, you know, getting a weapon in today's Ukrainian army is a very big deal. So this sentiment of defending your land, defending your country, defending your people from invasion and from the war is something that resonated as well. So the song that we will show you from this archive, it's called I Lie Beside My Machine Gun. It was collected by Mendelmann, quite a famous figure actually in Yiddish culture. Before the war, he was a teacher, and he was a teacher in Poland, and he ended up in the Soviet Union in Moldova, from where he was drafted in the army, and started writing Yiddish novels and memoirs and poetry. When he was in the Red Army, he was collecting Yiddish songs from soldiers. After the war, he became quite a famous artist. Here you see his photo with Marc Chagall. Marc Chagall drew him, and the painting of Marc Chagall of Mendelmann is in the Louvre today, and it's called A Jewish Writer. But during the war, Mendelmann was collecting songs like the one you're about to hear. And this one, predictably, is called I Lie Beside My Machine Gun, although some versions say I Love My Machine Gun, but we decided to keep it neutral for now.
Lieg ich neben Pulimiot, schöpche jüdisch neben, pari mir is auf Stil.
So that my people can live freely, but also so that all people live freely. The reason there are two lines here is that it's not that Berezovsky and, for what it's worth, Mendelmann were working in the atmosphere, I don't know, academic freedom, so they could write down all the songs that circulated and then publish them the way they were. Berezovsky, when he was preparing this material for publication in the Soviet Union in 1949, he was extremely worried that this song about a soldier fighting for his Jewish people will be perceived as too nationalistic. It will perceive as too Jewish. So you see how the originals say, I fight so that my people should live. It's crossed out, and instead it's written, unsere Völker, so all people should be free. So we sing two versions to give voice to an anonymous person who sang the song to Mendelmann, who was fighting for his people, and also to honor Berezovsky, who was working in the conditions that required him to make these kind of choices. This is what happens when two nerds are doing music, you know, some footnotes in the text. So, but I also want to say that Mendelmann, who became really famous after the war, not as much as the artist, but also as a writer, he wrote a number of novels, hundreds of, if not thousands of pages of memoirs. And all of them, almost, were devoted to his time in the Soviet Union. He left the Soviet Union in 1946, went to First Mandate Palestine, then lived in Israel for a little, then moved to Paris, then went back to Israel, and he published. In not a single of his publications, not a single of his memoir or novel, he mentioned that he was collecting songs from Red Army soldiers. In fact, when I met Zvi Mann, his son, when he came to visit Toronto in 2019, a few years ago, Zvi Mann still lives in Beersheba, I told him about this project. I told him that I found these documents with his father in the Ukrainian archive. And Zvi Mann said, it cannot be. He says, you know, Mann is not such a rare name. It was probably some other Mendelmann, because my father talked about every single thing. I mean, we couldn't like imagine there was anything he was not discussing. And then I said, well, I don't know, like I can't convince you. But then I showed him the archive. And you see, some of it is written by hand. And of course, he recognized his dad's handwriting. So that story once again told us that history and memory are sometimes telling very different stories of the past. And our next song is also talking about the war, but from a position of a person who is waiting for a soldier to come home. That song was the only song, I think, from this in this project that was actually published in the newspaper during the war. It appeared in a Soviet Yiddish weekly, actually it came out every 10 days, but fine, we'll call it weekly, called Einigkeit Unity. And as an example of new Soviet Yiddish songs that support Jewish soldiers, it was written by a woman named Berta Flaxman, who was from Zhytomyr, but who survived the war in Tashkent. And it is, I guess, one thing that I have to say that maybe it's a good place to mention as any, that a lot of songs in this archive came to us without the tune. And because Berigovsky didn't finish the project and he was arrested before it was all done, so not all songs were matched to tunes. Also, when he was arrested and the archive was arrested, it was all mixed together. So songs, the beginning of one song could be in one folder, the end could be in another, and the tune could be in the third one. So it's very hard to find and match them the way it is. But some of them just came as lyrics. So when that happens, sometimes we took a creative license. Well, we took, so we took a creative license and set those texts to a tune. So this particular song, Yoshka from Odessa, so I decided to set to a 19th century tune by Mikhail Glinka called Skylark. Mikhail Glinka was 19th century Russian composer. It was the song Skylark was wildly popular before the war. It was performed by Sergei Lemeshev, wildly known as the sex symbol of the 1930s Soviet Union. So we thought that Berta Flaxman from Zhytomyr, who is waiting for her Yoshke, her boyfriend or her husband, she's imagining them as handsome as Lemeshev and as brave as only Yoshka from Odessa can be. So please welcome Soy with Yoshka from Odessa.
As the soul becomes a world, be the leader clinging. This is for the woman dog with your spurn, Emanesser. As the road geschlossen sich mit dem Teitschaftmesser. Wie er es muss ich halt sich verwaschen der Keile, was es wird mit nun ein Schneiden, wie von Abbe will. Vor die Seuch hinter, wo sie rot lebendig bakrom, wird ihr Treife hitzles, eier ois kumenisch hom. Weil die rote Schäden steht, wie es gemacht, Chorem, Bashidits. Oh, Heron Rachmoner, sich zerechen, blieb die Fritz. Hitler am Busseldose, Herob zu nehmen, Josch des Nomen, wird auf ewig riemen sich und schämen. Hitler am Busseldose, Herob zu nehmen, Josch des Nomen, wird auf ewig riemen sich und schämen.
Ago, it was broadcast in the national radio. The guy received a record number of complaints because the song was too violent. And actually people who we worked with told us about this. How should we answer that? And the complaints were, well, my grandfather served in the Soviet Union, and they've never talked about violence, and said everyone was happy that when they came and arrived there, nobody was complaining about that. So again, history and memory were telling very different stories, and also their songs were accused of being calling for violence and stuff like that. Anyway, so the last part of the archive contained materials that were created in the Soviet rear. So 1.4 million Soviet citizens and about 250,000 Polish Jews, as well as some Romanian Jews, survived the war in the Soviet rear, so Central Asia, parts of Ural Mountains and Siberia. And again, what we learned from this archive, that the people who were there, the refugees and evacuees, were singing songs about the experiences in Yiddish. Again, that did not end up in most memoirs or oral histories. The evacuation of civilians was one of the largest Soviet-run projects run and accomplished, I would say, early in the war. The priority for evacuation was given to industries that were important to the Soviet war efforts, such as clothes making, weapon making, metal making, and of course agriculture. So you can see a very famous photo of cows being evacuated from West Soviet Union, walking through the Red Square. And by the way, if you're a cow in 1941, in June 1941, your chances of survival is a lot higher than a Jew who is somewhere in Berdichev or Kamenets Podolsk, other areas that were occupied by the German army very quickly. Another priority was given to cultural institutions, so these ballets and theaters and writers were evacuated. And this is how Berezovsky survived too, because he was part of the Ukrainian Academy of Science that was eligible for evacuation. This photograph is of ballerinas of Mariinsky Theater, Ballet Theater in Leningrad at the time. And you see they ended up in Perm, very far away from Leningrad. And you know, you can't miss a day of practice, it seems. And you can see on this photograph how these people looking on from the roof and how those young women are continuing their practice of ballet. And it's a well-known story about of 300,000 Polish Jews that survived. There were about 250,000 ended up in the Soviet Union. The majority of them survived, and some of them were survived by deportation. They were arrested for different reasons, sometimes for being business leaders, or belonging to political parties that were seen as undermining of the Soviet, potentially hostile to the Soviet regime. And many of them were sent to Soviet jails in 1939 and 40, released from those jails in 1941. And by that time, soon after that, it became clear that they were the only, sometimes family members of, the only members of their families that survived. Some of the songs from the collection were written by these refugees, and some were collected by some of those refugee scholars, or sometimes by Ukrainian Jews. So who ended up there? One of the people who collected a lot of songs in Kazakhstan was a man named Yakov Merzon. Yakov Merzon was a teacher in Kryvyi Rog, Ukraine. In 1932, he was arrested by Stalin's government for running an underground Jewish school, a hater. and he was sent to jail. The jail was located in Kazakhstan. By 1944, he got very sick. He was sick with tuberculosis. He lost all his teeth, and he was released on compassionate grounds, and he spent, he supported himself by begging on the streets of Almaty. And kids, refugee kids who saw him were making fun of him, just throwing rocks at him and dirt and stuff like this. And at some point, he started cursing them in Hebrew. And one of the kids reported the incident to their parents, and the parents went to see who's this beggar in Kazakhstan cursing in Hebrew, and found out who he was and hired him to teach those kids a little bit of Hebrew grammar, so how to read. As Meirzon was teaching those kids, they hired him for bread, for a little bit of food, of course, no money. And as he was teaching those kids, he was writing down the songs they sang to each other. And he wrote those songs, the text of those songs, in a small notebook. And because Meirzon was a Soviet political prisoner, he didn't know who was scarier, Hitler, that was really far away from Kazakhstan, or Stalin's government, or Soviet secret police that was right there. So whenever he wrote down the words of songs that he collected from those kids, he called them all anonymous. He did not reveal a single name of a single child that sang those songs. But the notebook survived. At the end of 1945, he sent that notebook to Berezovsky because he heard that Berezovsky was collecting Yiddish folklore. At the end of 1946, Meirzon died. He was very sick at that time, and he didn't know what happened to the notebook. And that notebook became the only source of Yiddish songs that circulated among children, Yiddish-speaking children in Kazakhstan. So now you will hear one of those songs. Oh, and by the way, about 70% of them are humorous. Laughing at different aspects of life, satirical, humorous, and with a lot of ridicule. And now you will hear one such song. It's called Purim Gifts for Hitler, from that Meirzon notebook.
Du bist nicht mein erster Sohn. Hat das Sascha Säune für euch verschreiben noch der Nomen in einem Zettel aus Ezech und mit Omen Omen Antiochus, Turkwamade, Kurschewa um die Welt verhieb ist früher noch von dir allein die Zettel Omen, sie ist voran, wenn die Stein geht Papier und ihr alle sich hat Ziel gestellt mich ob zu Kass wird kurz nach der Hand und sie soll ich da, aber sie Stalin wird schon kurz nach der Hand. Mein Friedler Haus Ost verbrennt, Osten meine Töchter geschenkt, Osten meine Eifel zertrocknet und geschworen mich Haus zu roten. Noch wild und narrisch ist ein Beise treu, wir werden leben sein wie sein.
Of course, to show one more story about this song. So you see, when it came to us first, it looked like this. So it was typed out, and it took for, and it ended with your end will be on Haman Street, and there was no Am Yisrael Chai in it. So when we were preparing this for a performance, Psoy said, you know, it doesn't quite rhyme. We have to add Am Yisrael Chai. And I said, why would we add Am Yisrael Chai? It's a Soviet song. I don't want any Am Yisrael Chai. It will not be right. And, you know, the program works like I speak to you here. He sits there and does what he wants. So, you know, he sang Am Yisrael Chai the way he did now. And the audience absolutely loved it. And we sold our soul to commercial success. So we just kept Am Yisrael Chai and it's on the CD as well, on the Yiddish Glory CD. Years later, we found the original of that song. So those of you who read Hebrew will see that the last line it says loud and clear, I'm Israel High. So you needed an artist to get another artist. Another person who recorded a lot of Yiddish music in Central Asia, especially in Kazakhstan, was journalist Herschel Blaustein. He was from Vilna. Before the war, he immigrated to Argentina, and he came back to the Soviet Union in the 30s and ended up in Almaty during the war. And there, commissioned by Einikai, by that Soviet Yiddish newspaper, he was collecting humor that circulated among refugees, specifically Polish refugees in Polish Yiddish-speaking refugees in Almaty. And he prepared an article for publication there, which was called Humor Among Refugees. And he started this article by the following sentence. 1943 will forever be remembered in Jewish history as the year when Jewish humor flourished. And now when we think about 1943, you know, by that time, most Jews of Ukraine and Poland and Belarus have already been murdered. Jews of Budapest have not even been deported yet to Auschwitz. So thinking of 1943 as a year of humor is very hard. However, for him in Almaty, this was right after the Battle of Stalingrad. This was the time when it seemed that the war was finally going to end. And it was the time when it was possible maybe to laugh. And also he made that sentence just because there was so much humor around him. So one of the pieces that he collected that we're going to perform for you is not exactly a song, although we'll perform it as a sort of a song. It's a joke, and it's called Joke with a Beard, recorded from an anonymous person in Kazakhstan in 1943.
A vitz mit Bord. Als Hitler oder Zenten sein Geschäft ist kaputt, Otters ist sie geklebt ab, pur, sie kommen mit um, frum jede Schlacht. Gebelsen, wo es ist noch geblieben, mein Leben der Kredit in der dritten Imperie. Kommen zu ihm. Behauptet, Bruder, Hitlers Menschen jucken sich noch mir. Dem jedes bald geworden, Mord in der ganzen Ringe. Oh, der Hit kein noch nicht gehört. Als ein Hit soll rufen, Hitler soll es rufen, Menschen. Хайс, йо, паскуднякес, йо, хинт, аваде, оберништ меч, вос-вос, норнит меч. Дер едес гевенит кайнар, то сок дир цу Хитлерн азуй. Их зе дох федер. Ich allein, ob mir behalten Bechader Chadores, ist der Fall, ob ich im ganzen Arop gewachsen in jüdischen Parze von sich. Koidem Kol, mizich reiche, ob nehmen die Purut, in dem Belos noch stickelich Wurzes. Neider noch Hitlerot bewies Neppes zu entfernen, Oder geht er strecket um die Hand in der Bord. Nukasja, 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 Nukasja. Bei Hitler und oben genommen sind... Fies und Hand. Und das hat ihm den ganzen Arois gegeben. Sagt er ihm. Ich hab gesehen, Ziegen mit Bert. Es ist natürlich. Ich hab auch viele gesehen, Berg mit Bert. Jiddische Berg in der Hand. Nur ein jiddischer Bund auf ein jiddischer Morde. Das hat man keinem nicht gesehen. Und der Witz ändert sich mit der Gramm. Jo Bord, nicht Bord, da geht nicht in kein Berg. Dein einziger Ort ist... Indre.
ваше место сам знаешь куда или где.
The book that Berigovsky and his colleagues prepared, with all these songs and stories, was never published. Hitler was gone, but Stalin, who the songs praised so wholeheartedly, now changed his attitude to Jews, and his government began to persecute them. In 1949, the Cabinet for Studies of Jewish Culture at the Ukrainian Academy of Science was shut down. Berigovsky lost his job. He worked as a choir leader at the beer factory. You have a photograph here as well. And in 1950, he was arrested and only released in 1956. He died in 1960, thinking that his work has been lost forever. Like biblical Moses, he never got to see the promised land. He never got to see the songs being performed on stage in his native Ukraine, let alone across the world from it, such as London, UK. We wanted to thank him for his heroic efforts that preserved the voices of singing for the darkest chapter of modern Jewish history. Yes, it is 75 years after the archive was closed, but the songs did see the light of day and then made it here to the Birkbeck Institute for Study Antisemitism and University of London. I would like to thank the participants and organizers of Beyond Campus and Forced Labor's conference, especially Dr. Jan Davison, I don't know if she's still here, and Tanesha Westcar, and also Professor Dieter Steinert for making this event happen and for bringing us here. Moreover, in about 3 weeks, BBC Three and BBC World will air a documentary to which I had an honor to contribute, produced by Michael Rossi, who is right here in the audience. And it will tell the story of Berigovsky's project and especially his amateur and professional collectors of Yiddish music in Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. We actually went to Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan to trace the stories of these people. So tune in for us on January 21st. Right, Michael?
Yeah.
Okay. But above all, I want to thank you, the audience, for being here with us tonight. You are fulfilling the dreams of people who never got to sing in public and who used music to document their history for us. I'm sure that this is what they would have wanted. So thank you. And we will finish with one last song that Berigovsky recorded in a DP camp in Berlin in 1946. It's also a humorous song, and it's not exactly a Soviet song, but to us it symbolizes the return to normalcy when Jews finally stopped laughing at Hitler and at fascism and began, once again, laughing at each other. So here's a song by an anonymous person who is making fun of Jewish relief organizations that work in those deep camps.
Daher und nie dahin. Und me fort, me fort, me fort. Und me sitzt noch hoppe in Nord. Me läuft zum Joint, me läuft zum Reben. Er kann sich mit kein Nei zu geben. Sog ne die es lieber Rov. Was wird sein mit uns der Sof? Lieber Bruder Norbitoch. Mir zerschäm noch ein paar Wochen, wirst du sein, ob jener sei, und von dort ist schon all right. In Joint der Staritios, geht uns nicht kein Entfernt, ob er los, mir sucht in dieser solchen Weh, meint er, dass es ist okay. Sognit, sognit, sie's noch gut, was ist do a Bocher von Sachnut? Er ist nur a Chwotker, ja, de Gita, er a Zertifikat. Noch a Reben scheint die Sun, weißen wir schon lang davon. Verliert mein Tage nie der Mut, ab mit Jeckes ist kaputt, ab Berlin ist stark zerstört, liegt mein Mehl in der Erd, und ich ist Ruhe, Tanz und Schrei, Heuer hab ich so Lang wollt noch geben mein Lied, nur ich bin schon etwas mit. Es wird sein, da jäh du da. Lied aus. Adieu.